This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Hello and welcome to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Darshan Johan. Real-life abang adiks are potentially in grave danger as the government of Malaysia looks to make a bundle of highly regressive and immoral amendments to our citizenship laws. These amendments will perpetuate statelessness among children, condemning them to a life without identity, access to education, healthcare, job opportunities, and more. There is the need to stress that one out of these proposed amendments is a step in the right direction, one that is welcomed by civil society, because there are aspects of the Malaysia citizenship laws that are highly sexist and discriminatory towards women. The federal constitution only grants automatic Malaysian citizenship to children born overseas to Malaysian men with foreign wives, but not Malaysian women with foreign husbands. After years of advocacy by civil society groups such as Family Frontiers, the government has said that they will be making changes. But instead of just making this one change, the Home Ministry, under the stewardship of Dato' Sri Saifuddin Nasution, has decided to make one positive step forward, five cruel steps backwards. Joining me on the show to share her thoughts on this is Prof. Dato' Nur Azia Mohamad Awal, Commissioner of Suhaka. Prof. Azia, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Prof, I want to start by just talking or understanding what exactly are stateless people. I think at this point, many people might have watched Abang Ade. They might have a slightly better idea, but let's refresh everybody's memories. What are stateless people and what are the different categories of stateless people in Malaysia?
A stateless person is a person who has no nationalities, no country attached to. They are non-citizen of any country. So they're practically stateless. And they may be staying in one country, but is not a national of that particular state. Now, the different categories of stateless could be many, in Malaysia in particular. Number one, we could have a long-term residence since pre-independence and their descendants. Some of them may become permanent residents, some they go on without the state. Yeah. And number two, these are stateless adopted children. They could be foundlings, and that also include the third category, abandoned children and foundlings. They may be found and then they were adopted by various people. And then still, when they were found, they have no documents. Trying to get them a document is a problem. But when they were adopted, even when they were adopted, they were given some document in terms of adoption, but they are not given citizenship of that particular country of the adopters, the parents. Yeah? So that is another category. So there's two, adopted and also abandoned. And then we also have children born abroad to Malaysian mothers, whereby the father are non-Malaysians, that they may also become stateless. In particular, where they were born in a state where the father themselves cannot even convey their citizenship to the child. So the child could be born in Britain, for example, but the father is probably a Palestinian, mother is Malaysian.
Right.
And the father can give his citizenship to the child. Child cannot be British, child cannot be Malaysian, so child is stateless. Mm. And then we have children born out of wedlock to Malaysian fathers. We have many these cases. We have stateless refugees, and we also have undocumented individuals not covered from number one to number seven. But the thing is, it's different. Of course, we need to remember, I include stateless refugees because sometimes stateless refugees are also undocumented. They have no document whatsoever. And sometimes they could be confused being a stateless person trying to get a citizenship of that particular country.
Many Malaysians are still unclear on the different terms, right? Because you have migrants, you have refugees, and then you also have stateless persons. Could you explain the difference between a stateless person and a migrant and a refugee?
Now, the difference between the three is their status, legal status, right, and the reason why they came into that situation. Now, stateless person, as I said, these are individuals who do not have citizenship of any country. they are not recognized as nationals under the laws of that particular state, which often leads to lack of legal protection and access to basic needs like education, medical care. Their statelessness can be due to various factors, including gaps in the nationality law or administrative hurdles. Refugees are people who have fled from their home country. They came from a particular country. A fear of persecution based on race, religion, nationality. So they are asylum seekers, yeah? So they will go to these other countries trying to get protection. They seek asylum in these other countries for protection. Unlike stateless person, refugees typically have a nationality but cannot avail protection from their own country. So they have a country, but they cannot live there, basically. Migrants are individuals who move from their country, home country, to another country, and usually for reason for seeking better economic opportunities, education, and then sometimes family reunification and other personal reason. Basically, they are citizens of their country of birth. Yeah, they usually have passports and all that. Their movement is voluntary and very often maintain their nationality and can return to their home country anytime.
Earlier, you mentioned the various categories of stateless people. Where do red IC holders fit into this equation?
Now, red IC holders, usually they are long-term residents.
Right.
They probably come as migrant workers. They probably come into Malaysia as visitors or getting a work permit, employment purposes. But they have been working in Malaysia for a very long time or staying with their families here. And then in the end, they probably apply for permanent residentship. Yeah, and we do know there are ways in which one could actually apply for permanent residentship. And usually the PR people were given the red IC. Yeah, these are the people that end up, you know, now in Malaysia when both parents or either parents, if one parent is a Malaysian, the other one is a PR, or both parents are PR, the children are then later on become Malaysians. Yeah, they are citizens of Malaysia.
There are cases, Prof, where both parents are Malaysians. The child has been living in Malaysia for decades, but the child still holds a red IC, and we see this in the news every now and again. And then, you know, the child cannot get entrance to school and all of that. We'll talk about the challenges that stateless people face in just a second. But how is it possible that both parents have been in Malaysia for the longest of time, the child grew up in Malaysia, and they have a red IC? How is that even possible?
These are the cases which I actually know where the mother, a Malaysian mother, the father is foreigners, and then the child was born abroad. When the child was born abroad, the child actually holds citizenship of the father's home country. Yeah, then they came back. There are time they would come back to Malaysia, either because mothers are divorced with the father, or sometimes both parents came back. The father then applied for permanent residence. Yeah, the children remain citizens of that particular country, and they would also apply for PR. And it gives them sometimes for a while until they're 12, 15, 16, they will probably hold the red IC, PR, and then later on may be considered. They have to apply to get a British citizenship. Yeah? And that basically is where you apply under Article 50B. I have met a couple of adults that are holding red IC. Their mother are Malaysians, but they cannot become Malaysian. And they pay very high fees on education. They have to pay for medical care like non-citizen, even though they may have a red IC and so on. So they do lead a very, to me, very deprived life because of they are not Malaysian citizens per se, like any other Malaysian children. Yeah.
So let's dive into that a little bit more. What are the challenges faced by stateless people in Malaysia today? What is the reality of their day-to-day life?
You can say, a lot of people may probably understood it after they're watching Abang and Adik. But to me, it's like a lot of stateless persons, people who are without documents, it is very difficult for them to get access to basic rights such as education, healthcare, employment. Yeah, they are also unable to register marriages. Imagine when you don't have a proper document and then you want to get married and then they say, well, I can't marry you all because you don't have a document. And when they do get married, they can't register the children because one of the parents do not have documents. So, and the marriage is considered informal, not properly registered. Then the registration department refused to register the child as Malaysian because the parent did not marry. I mean, we have to remember, under our law, if the father is Malaysian, and he can marry anyone, and the child could be born anywhere in the world, the child is Malaysian. But if it's a Malaysian woman, if she marry a foreign man, child must be born in Malaysia in order to become citizen. Now, if a man marry a foreigner, a foreign woman in Malaysia, it could be, and then the marriage was not properly registered. So when the marriage is not properly registered, in particular because the mother herself has no document, let's say she is from Philippines or from Thailand, yeah, and then suddenly she gave birth, and then when she gave birth, they went to get the child registered. Then the registration department said, could I have your marriage certificates? Otherwise, the child will be considered illegitimate child, and being illegitimate, she takes the mother's citizenship. So she could be Indonesian, she could be Thai, a Thai person. This is where the father has a responsibility to make sure that marriage is registered properly, then the child could also be registered as Malaysian.
On the show with me today is Prof. Dato' Nur Azia Mohamad Awal, Commissioners of Suhakam. We will continue our conversation after the break. Keep it here on Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Dafrin Johan, and on the show with me today is Prof. Dato' Nur Azia Mohamad Awal. She's the Commissioner of Suhakam, and we're talking about the proposed slew of regressive changes to the citizenship laws by the Malaysian government. This conversation is also available on podcasts. You can look us up, Beyond the Ballot Box, on Spotify, the BFM app, or wherever you get your podcasts from. If you're listening to this on Spotify, do give us a follow, drop us a review. I would really, really appreciate it. So, Prof, this next part is incredibly critical because the government is in process of tabling a slew of citizenship amendments to the federal constitution. What can you tell me about this, and what are your overall thoughts on this bundle of changes that they're trying to do?
So how come are very concerned about government proposal to amend several parts of the constitution in relation to citizenship, in particular part 2 of the second schedule of the federal constitution. And we are very concerned, you know, the thing is, we were invited for the consultations. What we heard was, we didn't see the proper which sections or which part is it going to be amended and how it's going to be worded. But what we know is that, and we were not even provided with any data or information, that all they could say is that they are being very careful so that this particular amendment will not be abused. But we do need to have to see the proof of what kind of abuse we're talking about. So basically, Suhakam is of the view that amendments to the federal constitution must be based on humane approach to enhance clarity, to enhance clarification and streamline the process of citizenship application. Now, we have heard from a lot of various NGOs, in particular those who are working towards getting citizenship passed from mother to child, particularly in children born abroad. And we do know almost all of them are unhappy with the proposed amendments, which we are not very clear of. But anyway, what we could say is that Suhakam commends the proposed progressive amendments to Article 14.1b, Section 1b of Part 2 of the Second Schedule of the Federal Constitution, covering the issue of children's citizenship who are born abroad. So we know that particular one is going to be amended, and they will change the word from father to parent. Yeah, one, even if the parents are Malaysian, then these children, no matter where they are born, should become children. And this also then will give us a better way of enhancing Article 8, because Article 8 talks about equality between genders, equality before the law. So now women can pass a citizenship to their children, no matter where they are born and whom she married. That's the other one. Yeah. But we are very concerned. Other proposed amendment that may lead to removal of citizenship rights instead of safeguarding statelessness, perpetuating the cycle of statelessness for vulnerable children, such as out of wedlock children, stateless children adopted by Malaysian parents, foundlings, abandoned children, as well as other generational stateless children or persons in Malaysia. So we are concerned that the proposed amendments, particularly, this is what we heard from our consultations, yeah, particularly proposed amendments to the wording in Section 19B of Part 3 of the second schedule of from citizenship to by operation of law to citizenship by registration. Now, at the moment, it is by operation of the law. But I think the government is proposing to delete that particular word operation of law to registration. Now, this will result in foundlings and abandoned children who will no longer be entitled to automatic citizenship and must apply via registration. The federal constitution currently protects foundlings. Section 19B is evidentiary provision that gives foundlings the benefit of the doubt when the date and the place of the child's birth and status of the child's parents are unknown and cannot be proven. I mean, you can't, the baby can't have been falling from the sky, yeah? So you can't be swimming across the sea and then suddenly say, hello, I'm Malaysian. But of course, the baby can't talk and there's no document. When the baby is found, surely the baby must have been born in Malaysia on our soil. They must be Malaysian. So we cannot do otherwise. So the amendments, if we, you know, change this particular provision from by operation of law, which is automatic citizenship, to by registration, we subject foundlings to discretionary citizenship and unreasonably place the burden of proof on the child as to its parentage. I mean, as I was saying, I mean, if the child suddenly falls from the sky, then where is he going to get all these documents? So who's my parent? And he can't even speak, yeah? And this, you know, furthermore, the process of registration is hidden with delays. At the moment, I mean, as you know, I mean, we have been dealing with a lot of applications. I mean, they have come to Suakam and complained. They made the applications, but for registration, particularly the Red IC group lah. So they have been applying and it takes them such a long time. And sometimes they do seek our assistance in writing letters saying that we seriously need to get this citizenship because our children needs to go to school and so on. But if this is going to be the same, I mean, we hope, well, the government keeps saying that we will have an SOP, we will do the what is necessary. Now, why not start now? Do it before even we amend the constitution. But at the moment, because there has been a long delay and there is no guarantee of approval, yeah. So Suakam actually strongly disapprove of these particular amendments.
I want to add some additional context for the listeners. Parliament's about to sit very soon. And essentially what has been happening is that Family Frontiers, along with a few other NGOs for the longest time, they've been pushing the government, you know, organizing, mobilizing a group of mothers and all of that. And their cause was against one particular thing in the Constitution only, which is have to do with gender discrimination, where Malaysian mothers with foreign spouses who gave birth overseas, the mothers cannot confer their citizenship. But if you are a Malaysian father and you married, you know, someone of a different nationality, and then you gave birth overseas, you can confer your citizenship to your kid. So that's clearly a sexist law. All you needed to do was essentially change father to parent. Essentially, that was the change that people have been pushing the government to do. Yes. And what the government ended up coming up with, it said, okay, we will change that, but here's five other changes that nobody asked for that we want to make. If this goes through, what will be the impact towards stateless people in Malaysia?
Well, if the government goes on with, I can give you this section, Article 19B issues, yeah? Mm-hmm. As an example, if the government decided to carry on with that amendment, which we never actually asked for, what we already have, we are just complaining that if we apply bad registration, it took ages. Sometimes the child has gone up to become an adult and they still cannot get citizenship. So they apply for PR instead and carry on with their life so long as they can find a job and settle in Malaysia. But the thing is, if we, we are very concerned and the way the government is doing this, because we only ask for one, okay? Why don't we just carry on with that one first? And then why there is a need to suddenly make other amendments and abolishing other provisions and which already being tested, we know that it could, at least the children could still rely on those articles, yeah? So if they... to me, these are going to be like you are creating another group, you know, of endless stateless people. They will carry on becoming stateless because they are foundlings, they are adopted, and then they couldn't get citizenship because they are not able to produce documents, right? So these will be like a vicious circle. It just go on and on, and you create many more people because you have abolished a particular section. So to me, leave that section alone. Don't disturb whatever is already there, what is still going on. What you need to do is probably enhance or make a proper SOP when someone is applying for citizenship via registration. Improve that procedure. You list it out when you come in, when you apply for your registration, application for citizenship by your registration. These are the documents that you need to bring, A, B, C, D, E. When they come in, you file it in. When you reply, duka cita, when you say, I'm sorry, you are not, we are not able to give you your citizenship because you must give A, 1, 2, 3, because you lack of A, you lack of B, you lack of C. You come back with this document, we will then grant you your citizenship. That is a much better way rather than abolishing that particular article. So what seems to be the... And even if the government say, well, don't worry, we are going to do the SOP. So, okay, why not do it now? Show it to us. Where's the SOP? And while waiting for the constitution to be amended, the SOP should be launched immediately. And that would ease some of the pain and worry that a lot of these people are having while waiting for their application for registration of citizenship.
Would it be fair to say, Prof, and I'm asking this really just to really drill home the point, that right now the Constitution allows or safeguards, have some protections for stateless people, and that it allows stateless people. So you watch the film Abang Ade, Abang or Ade, they have the right to apply for citizenship. But the problems that they face are bureaucratic. It is at an enforcement level. And then you go and then you apply and then the forms get buried. Then you have to apply again. You apply again for 10 years and whatnot. But at the very least, they have the right to apply. But yes, if these constitutional amendments are made, stateless people will no longer have that right to even apply for their citizenship. Am I understanding this correctly?
Yes, I would think so, yes. Because it would be impossible for them to prove their existence, then how are they going to apply by registration when the requirements could change from time to time? Unless we know what are the requirements, it being put down before us, and it is tabled to the public that these are the SOP, these are the requirements, then people would be able to accept the changes that is being planned by the government. But otherwise, leave that section, that article alone, leave it as it is, because it does protect foundlings in particular.
In your consultations with the government, Did they give a rationale for these proposals? Because I've seen videos, I've spoken to the mothers themselves who have been pushing for the change, that one small change that they wanted, which could make a big difference to their lives. And now they are feeling so bad and so frustrated and angry because they are feeling as if the government is putting them in between a rock and a hard place and say, if you want this change, this one change of this discriminatory sexist law, then you also have to accept all six, you know, all five changes. It's a one bundle kind of thing. And I've seen many of the mothers say, why are you forcing us telling mothers, you know, I'm going to give your children a rights, but I'm going to take rights away from other children.
As far as the Suhakam is concerned, we were consulted on the 18th of April, 23. And after that, we learned that on the 23rd of June, 23, Ministry of Home Affairs conducted engagement session with many CSOs representing the 8 proposed citizenship amendments. Mm. Then the CSOs were not happy. And then I think Suhakam, our children commissioner, Dr. Farah Nini, issued a press statement expressing her worry over the proposed amendments. Then Moha, on the 4th of July, 23, invited the children commissioner for a close discussion, trying to explain the reason for the amendments. Again, the children commissioner requested solid proof of security threats or excuse for the cause of the amendments. I mean, Moha, the minister actually said, well, it's security issues. And I think you may have heard also in parliament where minister actually gives certain examples that these might come into abuse. But, you know, we are not convinced. We feel that minister must provide data. Where's the data that people, you know, a foreigner would then dump their children on the road or somewhere, and then these children were adopted and became Malaysians? To me, it's like, you know, you can check how many abandoned children are in our children's homes, and even then, it was very difficult to adopt them because they have no citizenship at the moment. Now, Moha also promised to provide data, but until today, we have not seen those data provided by Moha. On the 6th of November, we learned that Moha has presented the 8 proposed amendments to the Ruler Council of Rulers, and we did not know whether it was the same proposed amendment being pursued or otherwise. So we felt that, and we were not able to see what are the amendments. I mean, we were just giving some explanation, and we gathered those information from the consultation that I attended, the first one with the NGOs. And again, we said, could we see what are the you know, the form of the wording of those amendments, but we were not allowed to do so. So to us, it's like, we feel that there should have been more consultations. And consultation, what does consultation mean? Consultation means is to get information, to get feedback, and by all means, do listen to what the rakyat is wanting. And as far as Suhakam is concerned, so long as if the amendment do not, you know, violate human rights, we would be able to accept it. But if it's going to create more stateless children, more stateless person, then we think this amendment should be re-looked, should be further discussed before it is tabled in parliament. But the one that we agree, a foreign mother, a Malaysian mother who gave birth to children abroad and married to a foreign man, that one should go on. I mean, that was what we have been campaigning for. That's what we want. Take that one amendment to parliament and everybody will agree to it, and there shouldn't be any problem. We didn't want that other amendments to be a hindrance to this particular one that we have been working on for a very long time. I think it's very unfair to give that particular excuses, take it or leave it, that kind of attitude. To us is that, look, what did we ask for? We asked for these foreign mothers to have equal rights to Malaysian mother, to have equal rights like Malaysian father, to give her citizenship to her children, no matter where the child is born and to whom she is married to. Full stop. That's it. But why add on to other conditions and other things? I mean, we are okay in terms of the requirement of passing the Malay language test. Okay, that's fine. But why take away the right from automatic or operation of law to become Malaysian to a registration one? And when we know when you apply to registration, it takes a longer time. And even adopted children, these are issues where these children, even in our own government children's home, these children have a birth certificate with their name, without parents' name. But then in the column where and they just put their non-citizen. How could you decide that the child is non-citizen? Were you given information? And these children were dropped, were foundlings, they were found by various people, and they were sent to these homes to be looked after and later adopted. And we do know a lot of adoptive parents are very concerned because, I mean, they are both Malaysians. They have a child who have no citizenship. How do they go for holidays? How do they take the child abroad? I mean, that does not include paying a very high fees on school fees and university's fees and so on. So to me, it's something that government should try and consider. And as far as Tuahakam is concerned, we really hope that the government take into consideration what we have actually said during our consultation, especially through our children commissioner, as well as we also, at Tuahakam as a whole, have met the minister quite recently. And we also mentioned that we would really like the minister to reconsider some of those amendments.
Absolutely. So essentially, are we talking about, taking a sort of decoupled kind of approach where you decouple these amendments, you just make one change, make one amendment to the sexist law, give Malaysian mothers their rights, and then leave everything else aside until further debates, further discussions? Is that what is being proposed right now at the Tuahakam, the NGOs? Is that what y'all are feeling right now?
Yeah, we feel that a longer, a much thorough discussion or research should be done before we even want to agree to the rest of the amendments. What we have wanted was the amendments to Article 14, 1B, and that should be done immediately and should be taken. I mean, if it's taken to Parliament, new session, I think probably just take one day, and because everybody knows what we are asking, and nobody actually, object to that particular one. So that is much easier than also giving us a full consultation, means a full information so that we know what is going on. I think it's only the fair way of doing things because this involves rights of a person.
Absolutely, because I think what's particularly troubling for me when I, covering this issue is that how sneaky things appear to be, how, lacking in transparency, and when the consequences could be so severe to thousands of children in Malaysia. Prof, it's been a wonderful conversation. Before we wrap this up, would you have a final message for us?
Well, my only hope now is we pray hard that the amendments, if it's decoupled, well, by all means, we really hope that the Malaysian mother are given the right to convey or to pass on their citizenship to their children, no matter where they are born. I think that's equality in terms of gender, and we really appreciate that. But I hope that government would ponder and think very deep thought in terms of other amendments, and maybe give it another go in the next session for other amendments to go through, because it is important for us to get this properly done. So, but we didn't want, because of the other issue, that the particular one amendment that we wanted is being stopped or being, postponed without reasonable reasons. Yeah.
Prof, on that note, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
That was Prof Dato' Nur Azia Mohamad Awal, Commissioner of Tuahakam. This conversation is also available as a podcast. You can look up Beyond the Ballot Box on Spotify, the BFM app, or wherever you get your podcasts from. If you're listening to this on Spotify, do give us a follow and drop us a review. I would really, really appreciate that. I'm Darshan Johan, and this has been Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, Download the BFM app.